Chapter 4, The Founding of the Hierarchy, Its Appearance on the Planet. It is not sought in this book to deal with the steps which led to the founding of the hierarchy on the planet, nor to consider the conditions preceding the advent of those great beings. This can be studied in other occult books in the Occident and in the sacred scriptures of the East. Suffice it for our purpose to say that in the middle of the Lemurian epoch, approximately 18 million years ago, occurred a great event which signified, among other things, the following developments. The planetary logos of our Earth scheme, one of the seven spirits before the throne, took physical incarnation, and under the form of Sanat Kumara, the Ancient of Days, and the Lord of the World, came down to this dense physical planet and has remained with us ever since. Owing to the extreme purity of his nature, and the fact that he is, from the human standpoint, relatively sinless, and hence incapable of response to aught on the dense physical plane, he was unable to take a dense physical body such as ours, and has to function in his etheric body. He is the greatest of all the avatars, or coming ones, for he is a direct reflection of that great entity who lives and breathes and functions through all the evolutions on this planet, holding all within his aura or magnetic sphere of influence. In him we live and move and have our being, and none of us can pass beyond the radius of his aura. He is the great sacrifice who left the glory of the high places and, for the sake of the evolving sons of men, took upon himself a physical form and was made in the likeness of man. He is the silent watcher, as far as our immediate humanity is concerned, although literally the planetary logos himself, on the higher plane of consciousness whereon he functions, is the true silent watcher where the planetary scheme is concerned. Perhaps it might be stated thus, that the Lord of the World, the One Initiator, holds the same place in connection with the planetary logos as the physical manifestation of a master holds to that master's monad on the monadic plane. In both cases, the intermediate state of consciousness has been superseded. That of the ego, or higher self, and that which we see and know, is the direct, self-created manifestation of pure spirit itself. Hence the sacrifice. It must here be borne in mind that in the case of Sanat Kumara, there is a tremendous difference in degree, for his point in evolution is as far in advance of that of an adept as that adept's is in advance of animal man. This will be somewhat elaborated in the next section of our subject. With the Ancient of Days came a group of other highly evolved entities who represent his own individual karmic group, and those beings who are the outcome of the triple nature of the planetary logos. If one might so express it, they embody the forces emanating from the head, heart, and throat centers, and they came in with Sanat Kumara to form focal points of planetary force for the helping of the great plan for the self-conscious unfoldment of all life. Their places have gradually been filled by the sons of men, as they qualify, though this includes very few, until lately, from our immediate Earth humanity. Those who are now the inner group around the Lord of the World have been primarily recruited from the ranks of those who were initiates on the Moon Chain, the cycle evolution preceding ours, or who have come in on certain streams of solar energy, astrologically determined, from other planetary schemes. Yet those who have triumphed in our own humanity are rapidly increasing in number and hold all the minor offices beneath the central esoteric group of six, who, with the Lord of the World, form the heart of hierarchical effort. The immediate effect. The result of their advent, millions of years ago, was stupendous, and its effects are still being felt. Those effects might be enumerated as follows. The planetary logos on his own plane was enabled to take a more direct method in producing the results he desired for working out his plan. As is well known, the planetary scheme, with its dense globe and inner subtler globes, is to the planetary logos what the physical body and its subtler bodies are to man. Hence, in illustration, it might be said that the coming into incarnation of Sanat Kumara was analogous to the firm grip of self-conscious control that the ego of a human being takes upon his vehicles when the necessary stage in evolution has been achieved. It has been said that in the head of every man are seven centers of force, which are linked to the other centers in the body, and through which the force of the ego is spread and circulated, thus working out the plan. Sanat Kumara, with the six other Kumaras, holds a similar position. These central seven are as the seven head centers to the body corporate. They are the directing agents and the transmitters of the energy, force, purpose, and will of the planetary logos on his own plane. This planetary head center works directly through the heart and throat centers and thereby controls all the remaining centers. This is by way of illustration and an attempt to show the relation of the hierarchy to its planetary source and also the close analogy between the method of functioning of a planetary logos and of man, the microcosm. The third kingdom of nature, the animal kingdom, had reached a relatively high state of evolution, and animal man was in possession of the earth. He was a being with a powerful physical body, a coordinated astral body, or body of sensation and feeling, and a rudimentary germ of mind, which might some day form a nucleus of a mental body. Left to himself for long eons, animal man would have eventually progressed out of the animal kingdom into the human, and would have become a self-conscious, functioning, rational entity. But how slow the process would have been may be evidenced by the study of the Bushmen of South Africa, the Vedas of Ceylon, and the hairy Ainus. The decision of the planetary logos to take a physical vehicle produced an extraordinary stimulation in the evolutionary process, and by his incarnation and the methods of force distribution he employed, he brought about in a brief cycle of time what would otherwise have been inconceivably slow. The germ of mind in animal man was stimulated. The fourfold lower man, A, the physical body in its dual capacity, etheric and dense, B, vitality, life force or prana, C, the astral or emotional body, D, the incipient germ of mind, was coordinated and stimulated and became a fit receptacle for the coming in of the self-conscious entities, those spiritual triads, the reflection of spiritual will, intuition or wisdom, and higher mind, who had for long ages been waiting for just such a fitting. The fourth or human kingdom came thus into being, and the self-conscious or rational unit, man, began his career. Another result of the advent of the hierarchy was a similar, though less recognized, development in all the kingdoms of nature. In the mineral kingdom, for instance, certain of the minerals or elements received an added stimulation and became radioactive, and a mysterious chemical change took place in the vegetable kingdom. This facilitated the bridging process between the vegetable and animal kingdoms, just as the radioactivity of minerals is the method of bridging the gulf between the mineral and vegetable kingdoms. In due course of time, scientists will recognize that every kingdom in nature is linked and entered when the units of that kingdom become radioactive. But it is not necessary for us to digress along these lines. A hint suffices for those who have eyes to see, and the intuition to comprehend the meaning conveyed by terms which are handicapped by having a purely material connotation. In Lemurian days, after the great descent of the spiritual existences to the earth, the work they planned to do was systematized. Offices were apportioned, and the process of evolution in all the departments of nature were brought under the conscious, wise guidance of this initial brotherhood. This hierarchy of brothers of light still exists, and the work goes steadily on. They are all in physical existence, either in dense physical bodies, such as many of the masters employ, or in etheric bodies, such as the more exalted helpers and the lord of the world occupy. It is of value for men to remember that they are in physical existence, and to bear in mind that they exist upon this planet with us, controlling its destinies, guiding its affairs, and leading all its evolutions on to an ultimate perfection. The central home of this hierarchy is at Shambhala, a center in the Gobi Desert called in the ancient books the White Island. It exists in etheric matter, and when the race of men on Earth have developed etheric vision, its location will be recognized and its reality admitted. The development of this vision is rapidly coming to pass, as may be seen from the newspapers and the current literature of the day, but the location of Shambhala will be one of the latest etheric sacred spots to be revealed as it exists in the matter of the second ether. Several of the masters in physical bodies dwell in the Himalaya mountains, in a secluded spot called Shigatse, far from the ways of men, but the greater number are scattered all over the world, dwelling in different places in the various nations, unrecognized and unknown, yet forming each, in his own place, a focal point for the energy of the Lord of the world, and proving to his environment a distributor of the love and wisdom of the deity. The opening of the door of initiation. It is not possible to touch upon the history of the hierarchy during the long ages of its work beyond mentioning certain outstanding events of the past and pointing out certain eventualities. For ages after its immediate founding, the work was slow and discouraging. Thousands of years came and went, and races of men appeared and disappeared from the earth before it was possible to delegate even the work done by initiates of the first degree to the evolving sons of men. But in the middle of the fourth root race, the Atlantean, an event occurred which necessitated a change or innovation in the hierarchical method. Certain of its members were called away to higher work elsewhere in the solar system, and this brought in, through necessity, a number of highly evolved units of the human family. In order to enable others to take their place, the lesser members of the hierarchy were all moved up a step, leaving vacancies among the minor posts. Therefore, three things were decided upon in the council chamber of the Lord of the World. 1. To close the door through which animal men passed into the human kingdom, permitting for a time no more monads on the higher plane to appropriate bodies. This restricted the number of the fourth or human kingdom to its then limitation. 2. To open another door and permit members of the human family who were willing to undergo the necessary discipline and to make the required stupendous effort to enter the fifth or spiritual kingdom. In this way, the ranks of the hierarchy could be filled by the members of Earth's humanity who qualified. This door is called the Portal of Initiation and still remains open upon the same terms as laid down by the Lord of the World in Atlantean days. These terms will be stated in the last chapter of this book. The door between the human and animal kingdoms will again be opened during the next great cycle, or round, as it is called in some books. But as this is several million years away from us at this time, we are not concerned with it. 3. It was also decided to make the line of demarcation between the two forces of matter and spirit clearly defined. The inherent duality of all manifestation was emphasized, with the aim in view of teaching men how to liberate themselves from the limitations of the fourth, or human kingdom, and thus pass on into the fifth, or spiritual. The problem of good or evil, light or darkness, right or wrong, was enunciated solely for the benefit of humanity, and to enable men to cast off the fetters which imprison spirit, and thus achieve spiritual freedom. This problem exists not in the kingdoms below man, nor for those who transcend the human. Man has to learn through experience and pain the fact of the duality of all existence. Having thus learnt, he chooses that which concerns the fully conscious spirit aspect of divinity, and learns to center himself in that aspect. Having thus achieved liberation, he finds indeed that all is one, that spirit and matter are a unity, naught existing save that which is to be found within the consciousness of the planetary logos and, in wider circles, within the consciousness of the solar logos. The hierarchy thus took advantage of the discriminative faculty of mind, which is the distinctive quality of humanity, to enable him, through the balancing of the pairs of opposites, to reach his goal and to find his way back to the source from whence he came. This decision led to that great struggle which distinguished the Atlantean civilization and which culminated in the destruction called the Flood, referred to in all the scriptures of the world. The forces of light and the forces of darkness were arrayed against each other, and this for the helping of humanity. The struggle still persists, and the world war through which we have just passed was a recrudescence of it. On every side in that world war, two groups were to be found, those who fought for an ideal, as they saw it, for the highest that they knew, and those who fought for material and selfish advantage. In the struggle of these influential idealists or materialists, many were swept in who fought blindly and ignorantly, being thus overwhelmed with racial karma and disaster. These three decisions of the hierarchy are having and will have a profound effect upon humanity, but the result desired is being achieved, and a rapid hastening of the evolutionary process and a profoundly important effect upon the mind aspect in man can already be seen. It might here be well to point out that working as members of that hierarchy are a great number of beings called angels by the Christian and devas by the Oriental. Many of them have passed through the human stage long ages ago and work now in the ranks of the great evolution parallel to the human, and which is called the Deva evolution. This evolution comprises, among other factors, the builders of the objective planet and the forces which produce, through those builders, every form familiar and unfamiliar. The devas, who cooperate with the hierarchical effort, concern themselves, therefore, with the form aspect, whilst the other members of the hierarchy are occupied with the development of consciousness within the form.